Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. I think the very best thing about seeking reality as we do is that finally knowing the truth about death can help us turn some of the worst times of our lives into some of the best times of our lives. If death were really the end, then no matter how old or how sick our loved ones were, we still would be desperate to keep them alive. We would see their deaths as tragic extinctions. But, my dear friends, when my father died of a stroke at 86, I was able to sit with him and talk and laugh and be glad for him and then let him go with easy grace. When my much-beloved mother died many years later, she was much younger than he was, I didn't even cry. I was just joyous for her, and then I was thrilled as she began to give us some spectacular signs of her survival. That's the difference it makes. Until recently, hospices refused to allow any literature or teachings about life after death, but at last that has begun to change. Nothing alleviates the fear of death like learning that death really isn't the end of anything, and that those whose profession it is to help the dying need to come around and appreciate that fact. It's finally begun to happen. My wonderful friend, Dr. R. Craig Hogan, is at the forefront of just about everything happening now in the field of afterlife studies. And this is yet another area where he's working right on the cutting edge. He joins us today to talk about helping the dying to transition happily and also to tell us more about the Afterlife Research and Education Institute symposium that is set to happen in September of 2017. Big doings. Welcome, Craig. I am so glad you're here.
Oh, Roberta, I'm always glad to be with you. So we have a wonderful time talking, and it's the kinds of things that I most like to spend my time working with. You like to as well, and we can share it with everybody. And isn't that wonderful?
One of the things about whenever Craig and I get together, it's like just a joyous love fest. We just have so much
fun
talking about. Yes, we talk about this stuff endlessly, and we can bore everybody, but we can't bore each other. All right, for those who may not know much about you, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your past? And you were a late bloomer. I think people who are wondering whether they have time in their lives to get involved in this stuff need to know how late you started. And here you are right at the head of it.
Yeah, and what's actually happening now is that they're discovering that more and more people are coming late in their lives to understanding these things. And that many people, or most people, perhaps, are coming in after the age of 55. Now, I wasn't quite that old. I was a little bit younger than that, but I still came in late. And before that, I had been a business communications professor and a curriculum coordinator for universities and administrator. And then I didn't really have a belief in anything prior to that. And I finally started at about the age of 52 meeting all kinds of psychics. They kept coming into my life, and I didn't know where they were coming from. I'd never met one before, and one psychic after another. And so one of them convinced me to go to find out whether I have psychic ability. And we went to see a psychic and sat down with her. And she said, yeah, you've got psychic abilities. You've got psychometry abilities. You can hold things in your hand, and when you hold them in your hand, you'll be able to tell things about them. And so I discovered that, in fact, I was able to do that. And then they told me that I would have remote viewing ability, meaning I could sit someplace and I could focus on a place thousands of miles away, and I would be able to see things that were there. And in fact, I could do that. I could sit down and do it. And so after that, then I discovered that, that there's much more to life than it appears. And then I then discovered that we continue to live, that there is no end to our lives, and that all we do is go through transition. So we change forms. We change. It's like changing clothing. It's like changing your address. And we just continue going on, and it happens that we continue after that event that is a transition called death. and that there are wondrous, wondrous things that happen after that. And that's when I really solidly got into it. And that was, I was in my 50s when I first started.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. I think one of the important things for people to understand is that it is possible very late in life to learn everything you need to know about this field. If it interests you, it can be a wonderful retirement, for example, hobby, and mm-hmm. it can be something that people can start in their own communities and teach. Once you've learned it, you can teach it. And that's the need is going to be tremendous, don't you think, over the next 5-7 years for there to be people yeah. in every community who can help people find out what's really going on. That's the kind of the point yeah. of all of this.
Yeah, because we're really learning it now. We're learning it at this moment. And there yes. are many more people, the baby boomers, of course, are aging. And there are many opportunities to help people to understand this. But there's such a need for people to realize that life is eternal, that we continue after the transition called death, and that there's nothing to fear. And you said something about, you know, when you're sitting with someone and they're about to make the transition, if people only knew that in the 10 minutes after they've made the transition, they're going to discover that they're young and healthy
yes.
and
yes.
that things are wonderful and their loved ones are there and their pets are there. And that's only going to be in a few minutes. It's just going to be a
yes.
few minutes from now. And if they could just
easy.
Realize that, it would
yes.
make such a difference for people.
Now, one thing that we should point out right at the start, we're going to talk about some exciting developments in this field, and it is a burgeoning field. But it used to be that now most people die in hospitals, but that wasn't always the case. Talk a little bit about how historically people have made their transitions.
No, that's a relatively recent occurrence for people to die in hospitals. Actually, up until the 19th century, people would die at home, and the family would come around. The person who was about to pass would actually orchestrate the whole thing and would say, "It's time now. Have everybody come, have all of the family come around," and then they were the ones who orchestrated the whole thing, and they would have the people come into the room, and they would talk to each one of them individually, and they would give things to people that they wanted to give to them, and then they would have a peaceful passing at home with all of their loved ones around them, and it was a time that they realized that there was going to be something more. They intuitively knew it, and people were more attuned to the religions then, and the religions then were telling them that there was something afterwards. So then it was a whole different atmosphere. And
yes.
then it was in the 20th century that the hospitals started taking over, and the reason they did is because people were so fearful of death, and they wanted to keep
yeah.
the body alive, as long as they could. But the surprising thing is that the studies have found that among those people who don't go into that sort of heavy-duty care within a hospital and stay home and have their final hours at home, they actually live longer and live better. They have better quality of life. So they actually benefit by having their passing at home instead of being in a hospital with all the tubes and machines and people who around them who are strangers. So it really makes a difference.
And the worst thing about it is that when they die, they usually are absolutely alone. There's nobody around who loves mm-hmm. them. And that's the most tragic thing I can possibly imagine. Let's talk about the move toward home. At first, I'd like to sort of tell a quick story about my dad's passing, which was actually 20 years ago. It was unusual for people to take someone home. My mother was 14 years younger than he was, so she was very young when he died at 86. And she had been promising him throughout his life that he was going to leave the house only feet first and with a lily in his hand. So when he had a stroke and they told us, you know, he wasn't coming back from it, she had him brought home. And for 2 weeks, which is about how long it takes typically, we had hospice come in and make him comfortable. But we just sat with him and talked. I read the Bible to him. We sang to him. We brought in his friends. I actually saw this man who was totally paralyzed on his right side smile. He couldn't talk, but he was part of the conversations going on in his room. It was a glorious, actually a very special time. And then he just passed quietly one night. And to me, that is a good, don't you think that's a good death, Craig?
Isn't that wonderful? That is wonderful. And that's the way it should be. That's the way it can be. It's actually a transformative experience. And it's transformative not only for the person who's about to pass, and it's a wonderful thing to pass. So finally, especially when you're that old and you have lived a full life and it's time, you can graduate now. And after you graduate, then you'll have your loved ones around you. It's wonderful for them, but it's also wonderful for the people who are around, for the family. And in fact, the Shared Crossings, which is a wonderful movement in California, Santa Barbara, by William Peters, Shared Crossings is teaching people how to have these crossings. And what they've done when they've studied it is to find out that the people around the person who's about to pass develop a deep, heartfelt connection with other people as a result of that. They change as people. Their awareness expands. They actually become more intuitive. They have feelings of gratitude and kindness that are just spontaneous, that keep coming out for weeks afterwards because they're changed. And it really is affirms their life. It affirms the who they are and what is happening in their life. And they look forward to the rest of their life because they know that it's going to be fulfilling and that finally they'll end up at a reunion. So it's wonderful for the person who's having the transition. It's wonderful for the people, for the family around them. And it can be a joyous time. It doesn't have to be a time of feelings of grief and sadness and loss and all of the negative feelings that people feel now.
Now, that's extraordinary, what you've just said. Why would it have these spiritual effects to this extent, do you think, on the people who are just there helping the person transition? Why would it make such a difference? I mean, I could imagine that it would be good for people to sort of, you know, say they're sorry or say thank you, or do just, you know, whatever things they need to do for closure. I can see that would be good. But how on earth are we able to explain that it changes them to that extent? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, it's because of the fact that we really are it's as though we were standing facing forward, and behind us there is a beautiful environment. You know, there's a paradise. And we're standing looking forward, and we never look around. We never stop and see what that is. But when, during that process of transition, the person's about to transition, then we have to stop, look around, and say, now, wait a minute, what is all this life about? What is going on here? And they become closer with each other. They begin to see each other more as human beings. They understand that this isn't the end. And all of that's transformative. All of it changes. But it's also more than that. You know, it really is a spiritual experience. There are changes that happen in the room. And it's a very common occurrence for in the room when a person is passing, for there to be a very bright light in the room. The light changes.
Wow.
Things happen that are supernatural. And not only that, but Raymond Moody has found that there can be a shared experience.
Yes.
In other words, the people in the room can see the loved ones on the other side. They can actually see them in the room about to help this person to transition over. And it's a beautiful spiritual experience. And it is only that beautiful spiritual experience if we allow it to be. If we let it happen the way that it should happen, it's natural. And all we do is we either allow it to happen the way that it is meant to happen, or we can impede it by being grief-stricken and keeping people in hospitals and keeping them away from this kind of an environment where they can have these experiences. So we actually thwart it because it's right there. All we have to do is turn around and look at it.
But think about how extraordinary this is. And I should just put a little plug in for Raymond Moody's book. Raymond coined the term near-death experiences in 1975 with his book Life After Life. And 25 years later, in 2010, he coined he coined the term shared deathbed visions in his book Glimpses of Eternity, which everybody should read. It's short, it's easy to read, and it's beautiful. And it's full of tales of people who were sitting at the deathbed, and in some cases they got to see what the person, they saw the visitors come to the deathbed, And in some cases, they actually got to go part way. The person who had just transitioned left his body, and they went with that person almost all the way before they then went back to their bodies. I mean, this is just, it's like there's this whole new frontier. We're talking about exploring the heavens. There's this spiritual frontier, which is core to everybody's life. We all have people being born and dying all the time in our lives. And this whole aspect of ourselves is so, so important. And we've been ignoring it for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. But now we don't have to ignore it anymore. Certainly for the past 100-odd years, we've been ignoring it. But isn't it beautiful? And so the people at Shared Crossings then, which I think I just have heard about them just now, and I'm excited about them, they are trying to make this a commonplace then? People commonly bring people home for the transition?
Yes. And they also have what they call death midwives. And the death midwife is a person who helps them to have a home crossing when they're at home, and then after that, a home funeral, which is really a celebration of life. There is this an understanding now that there is a tremendously wonderful spiritual experience that's going to be happening, and it's something for people to look forward to, and it makes it a big difference. And in fact, it's so common, it's about 10% of the people who are going to pass peacefully who are still lucid towards the end. So about 10% are still lucid. Among those, 50 or 60% have these experiences. They have experiences of seeing their loved ones in the room. They are conversing with them.
To be medicated through your death is an awful waste of extraordinary experience possibilities, because most people who are fairly lucid will report, or at least will be aware that they are experiencing visions of people that they used to think were dead. And as Craig pointed out at the end of the previous segment, we know that these experiences are not caused by any kind of hallucination, any kind of medication. In fact, medicated people usually can't experience them. But those without any medication in their systems, who are just in the process of dying, will see mom, they'll see their childhood dog, they'll see loved ones that they, you know, maybe thought really weren't alive. And they'll be young and they'll be healthy, and it'll be a celebration right there at the bedside. And some of those sitting there trying to help their, who are in body still, trying to help the loved one through the experience of death, will see those people too. It's an extraordinary thing. But let's talk a little bit about that, Craig, and about why it's so important that those people come to the deathbed. Have you thought about that?
They come there because of the fact that they're joyous to be able to have the reunion, for one thing, and they want to reassure the person that they're there and they're ready for them. They are anxious for them to come over. And so it is a common experience, you know, that 50 to 60% of those who are passing and are lucid have these experiences. And so they will come, and the other reason for not medicating people at that point is that some of them also have what's called a terminal lucidity. And a terminal lucidity means that this person may not have been lucid before, may have had Alzheimer's, may have had dementia. But then in the final hours, in the final day, then they will suddenly just sit up in bed, completely lucid, have a conversation with their loved ones, and make final plans with their loved ones. And then after that's over, then they just then pass. But
isn't
the terminal lucidity is a very common phenomenon, and you can't have that if you're all doped up. And so it's important that the family be around, because there will be remarkable things that can happen. And that's what's so important. You just don't know what's going to happen. Every passing is unique. Every passing is unique. So it's not the same thing that happens with every person. And it's individual. It's meant to be uplifting. It's meant to change lives. It changes the lives of the people who are there. And, of course, it changes the life of the person who's doing the transition and graduating. And in the next 5 or 10 minutes, they're going to be young and healthy, and they're going to be vibrant and feel like a whole weight has been taken off of them, like they have no weight in their body. And it's going to be a wonderful time of reunion with them, with their loved ones and pets and those whom they have missed for so many years.
Now, but an enlightened hospice, if people can't do it at home, and there's some people are thinking, oh, but we couldn't do it at home, but we want to be part of this. There are good hospice programs, right? Where the hospice will allow you to be with the dying person for as much time as you want to, and will allow you to enrich the dying experience for the person who is now leaving. So that's something to look into. If anybody with a sick or an older relative ought to know what hospice options are available in their area. It's just part of the kit that you're going to need, because when the time comes to make these decisions, it may be quick. You may not have the time to do the research that you ought to sort of have done. So just look around when it's not essential that you make a decision right away. And I think you'll find that you have some good options. We did it at home for my dad. We found you rent the hospital bed, you call hospice, they start coming. It was really easy, but it was easy because both my mother and I were able to be with him all the time. She was retired and I just took a leave. If you can't do that, there are still great options. And in these hospices, there are many, many wonderful, loving caretakers who can tell you stories about what they've witnessed. So my experience with hospices in general has been that the hospice itself doesn't want you talking about anything other than, either maybe your own personal religion and the religion of the person plus health stuff. But what I've found from actual caretakers is they're much more open, and they will talk with you and talk with your loved one about what might happen. Don't you think that's right?
Yeah, and there are individuals within the hospices who are willing to open up and talk and help people through it. So there are individuals, and it is the hospice administration they're in a difficult position. They're really in a hard position because they don't know what the family is going to accept, and they don't know what's going to happen in the community if they start talking about the afterlife. So they're in a difficult position, and so you have to understand that. But they are very open to having their employees, the people in some of them in the hospices, talk about it. So you just have to be careful about having a good hospice where they're willing to talk about it, and you can ask them that. You can say, "Are you willing to talk with my dad about what's going to be happening next, about the afterlife?" And if they say, "Yeah, we are very much attuned to that as individuals," an individual would say that, and then that's a good place to go.
And there's another thing that I think we should just mention, and that's the fact that much as we sort of treasure these shells that we carry around while we're here, the dying people really don't care about their bodies. After they leave their bodies, it's just like an old Toyota that goes to the junkyard. They really don't seem to care. I've never read I have read a couple of communications from people who said, "Why did you put me in that dress?" But those were maybe lower developed people. By and large, they really don't care. So it's not important how you handle the body after death, unless the person has specific wishes. What's important is helping them get out of that old Toyota and begin this glorious new life in the most joyous possible way. One of the questions I'm often asked, and I'm going to ask it of Craig, is, so do people go to their own funerals? Are they there?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, many people will go to their own funeral. Some people actually go through the whole process, so they will stay with the body after they have left the body, stay with the body, and one of them described going to the morgue, and he said he didn't like that. He got out of there quick. But they many of them will go to their own funeral, and they will be there with the people who are grieving, and they desperately want to tell them that they're fine and they're there and not to worry about them, that they made a good transition. They can sometimes get through to some people, but most of the time they can't. But they do go. And the other thing that happens is that very often then a person at the point of their passing, of their transition, then they will appear to someone thousands of miles away. And there's a personal story of a fellow that I know here who's in Peoria, Illinois. And he described he was driving down the road all alone. And all of a sudden his Uncle Neely was sitting in the passenger seat next to him. And he said, "Mike, the mass is over." And then he disappeared. And it happened that he had passed away at that moment.
Wow.
So it's a very common occurrence for people to appear to loved ones.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's quite common. Well, the most famous story like this, and people didn't know till recently what he was talking about, is Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, who both died on the same day, 50 years to the day after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And they were great friends late in their lives. Thomas Jefferson died in the morning of the 4th of July, 1826, and Adams, in the afternoon, was lying there moribund. They were sure he was minutes from death. And then he mumbled, "Thomas Jefferson still survives," which was a peculiar thing for a man, an old man, to be thinking about when he's minutes and seconds from death. But we know now what happened. Thomas Jefferson, as soon as he died, appeared at the deathbed of his friend. He was died in Virginia. Adams died in Massachusetts. There's no distance where he was then. And he appeared there, and Adams saw him. Isn't that exciting? Think about that. It happens so often.
Yeah, it's not unusual at all for that to happen. Or for the person, if they don't see them, if they don't actually physically see them, they have the sense of their presence. That they know that they're there, that they're tangible, even though they can't see them. And so that very often happens that someone will do that. And we're not entirely sure how they're able to do that, because some people go through a period when they actually go into sleep after their transition. And they'll wake up in a short period of time. It's about 3 Earth days. And then their loved ones are all around them. And so it's a different circumstance. So everything that happens in the process of this transition is personal. It's all meant for the individual. It's what's best for us. And it's something to look forward to, because whatever it is, it's going to be exciting.
It's going to be fun. And fun is what it's all about. Now, speaking of fun, let's talk about what I think is a very exciting field. And this is one also where Craig is heavily involved, and that is communicating electronically, not just even with dead people, but with people who are in vegetative states, not yet born. That's happening now. Tell us more about it. I know very little about this field.
The foremost researcher is Sonia Rinaldi. She's a Brazilian researcher. And Sonia is now communicating. She, for years, was communicating with people who had crossed over. She was uniting parents with their children on the other side. And what she would do is she would get the voices of the person on the other side into a recording and answer questions that the parents had. And then they would play back the recordings, and the parent would hear the answers from the child on the other side.
Wow.
And so she was doing this characteristically as many as 163 of these sessions a month, with as many as 200 of these messages in each session. But then after that, she decided that she ought to be able to communicate with the consciousness, the eternal self that's always alive and well, that is above and beyond the ego or the earthly self. She ought to be able to communicate with them in people who are in comas, who are suffering from ALS, who are nonverbal autistics. And so she did it. She recorded their voices in the same way she did people in the afterlife. And now she's able to ask questions, or someone else can ask questions. And the questions then come out on the recorder. And then right after the questions on the recorder, there's the answer. So the person is speaking to them. And there's one nonverbal autistic girl who had never spoken. She wouldn't speak. But when Sonia recorded her, she spoke very fluently. She spoke about what she loved, what she didn't like, what she was thinking about, and she communicated. So now the latest thing that Sonia has done is that she is actually communicating with the higher self, the soul of an unborn child. And the reason is because her sister-in-law is pregnant, and she is afraid that she has the Zika virus. And so they wanted to communicate with the unborn child, to see whether there was anything they could find out about whether the child would be deformed or not. And so she did the same procedure that she had done for people in the afterlife, for people who were in comas, and she actually got answers from the unborn child, and the unborn child said that she was anxious to come and that everything would be fine. So that was that is where she is right now in her research. There is no end to what we can do with electronics now.
It. Isn't that amazing? But think
it
about
is amazing.
this. If you have a loved one who is comatose, who is nonverbal, perhaps severely mentally handicapped, unborn, all of those people are eternal beings. And there is a higher self that apparently now we are learning how to communicate with and have conversations about. I think of the joy of people caring for a loved one when they can finally say, you know, hey, do you have anything you need from us? I mean, is the room warm enough? Just basic stuff like that to be able to make people's lives a little better. This is just the start. This is sort of like, you know, the Wright brothers are starting to their flight and, you know, perhaps Edison is talking through those first wires. It's just the beginning of a whole new world of communication and relief from pain. And it's going to be fun to watch. There's another topic I want to make sure we cover. Craig is the president of the Afterlife Research and Education Institute. I'm on the board and privileged, thrilled to be there. And we're putting on a symposium in September of 2017. We don't like the word conference. It doesn't sound serious enough. But in fact, this is going to be the conference of conferences in this field. And I'd like to ask Craig to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, what we're doing is we are going to be assembling the people who are at the forefront of the work in afterlife communication, in the end-of-life activities, such as those we've been talking about, and in the new understanding of the meaning and purpose of life that we can call spirituality. And we're going to have all three of those topics. We're going to bring together the people who are at the cutting edge, and we want them to be able to talk among themselves. But we also want everybody else to be able to come in and learn from them. And so we will be there training people. We'll be training hospice workers and clergy. And we'll also have the general public, anybody who's interested in those topics, come in and we'll give presentations and also teach people. So we're going to have workshops that are going to teach people how to communicate with their loved ones on the other side. We know how to do it now. We virtually 100% of the people can communicate with loved ones on the other side. And so we're going to be doing that. We're going to be teaching people at the symposium.
It's very exciting. One of the things that we've decided at AREI is that our job is not just to put on these, you know, wonderful, wonderful places for people to come and learn and meet one another, but we've got to work all year long to help people to do outreach. So we're doing a couple of things. First off, we're trying to help people start groups in their areas where they all can learn and help and support one another in learning. And talk a little bit about that, Craig.
What we want to do is the most important work in afterlife communication, in an understanding of the end-of-life affairs, is going to be happening in a local group. It's going to be a group of people who get together, and they can have discussions. We can give them materials. We'll have make materials available to them for their discussions, and they can then develop their own abilities. They can learn how to communicate with the people on the other side. We'll teach them. We'll show the groups how to do it. And so all of the activities are going to happen in these small groups, and the people are going to come together regularly and learn in love with each other about the afterlife and about the continuing life that they're going to have. There will become a support group as well as a group that's going to help each other to learn. And then when the groups come together, then occasionally we're going to have efforts to have them Skype with each other. So the different groups will be able to communicate with each other. And we're also going to be encouraging them to have circles. And circles means that people are going to come together and have afterlife experiences in the room. And we know that we can do that now. We have a circle here in Illinois that we've developed, and we have five people in the circle. And we are actually having phenomenal experiences when we sit around, and there are activities happening in the room because of our attunement to spirit and our attunement to those on the other side. So the small groups are going to be the engines. The small groups are going to be where it's the exciting, interesting things are happening. And we'd like everybody who wants to be part of a small group to just contact us. Just let us know that you'd like to be part of a group, and we'll help you to start the group. And then we'll give you the information that you can have for the group, so you don't have to worry about what you're going to be doing. And we will allow as much time as we have to helping you set up a group.
Members of AREI as well, who are more expert, will be available to perhaps Skype in and be speakers, share materials. Just whatever your particular group's interest is, we want you to be able to pursue it as far as it'll take you. So our task we see is supporting the whole movement, which is why we're also bringing together as many related groups as possible to just serve them as well. That's our job. Our job is not so much to lead, because the leading, believe me, is being done all over the world now, but to support, to try to make sure that those who want this information are able to get it. So if you're someone who is interested in this field, but you don't know how to kind of get involved, a great way would be to become a part of a small group in your neighborhood, and we'll teach you. We will do whatever we can to bring your knowledge up to whatever level you want it to be, because the learning in this goes on forever, and it's joyous. So the other thing we're talking about doing, and this is a little bit hard to get our minds around, is starting what amounts to an online university, one place where you can come to learn about just about any aspect of this field that you'd like. And this field is much really broader than just what happens at death or after death. It also includes what reality is made of. As Craig said, it includes what spirituality actually is. It really, everything you can imagine has a counterpart in this area of knowledge, and it's all evidence-based. That's why we call this program Seek Reality, because that's what we all should be doing. We aren't getting the truth from either our religions or even from science. So we've got to seek it on our own, and the university will be a way to help to do that. That's a little behind in development, but we hope within the year to have it up and running for you. So those are just some of the things that we're doing, and we're very open to suggestions, too. I mean, if you have a suggestion that you'd like to share, everyone knows how to contact me through robertagrimes.com. I always answer emails. And or you could perhaps contact Craig. Craig, how would people find out more about the symposium?
If you want to find out about the symposium, it is at afterlifestudies.org. So it's afterlifestudies.org. All one word. And all of the information is there about the people we have now. We have 18 speakers lined up so far. We will be getting at least 7 more. And the information is there. And you can send me an email anytime if you have any questions about it, or you can call. And the information about calling and emailing is there on the website. Because we're very anxious to talk with people about the groups that they might like to start. It takes only one individual to start a group, and we could show you how to do that. If you are one individual, then it's easy to start a group. And so any of those questions about starting groups, about the afterlife, about these end-of-life activities, any of those things, we're very anxious to talk. So we want you to get a hold of us. The Institute's website is afterlifeinstitute.org. So you can go to afterlifeinstitute.org or afterlifestudies.org, and either one of them will get to all of this information about what we're doing right now.
Craig, thank you so much for being with me today. This has been so much fun, and we will do this again soon. You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio, and I am thrilled that you joined us today. Hasn't it been fun? Never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you really get everything that means, it's just going to change everything in your life for the better. It will transform you. Our guest next week will be Kelvin Chin. Kelvin's obsession, and I do mean obsession, is teaching everyone to overcome the fear of death. Craig and I, as you can hear, concentrate on afterlife education as an antidote to what really is humankind's fundamental fear. But Kelvin has 4 different methods that he outlines, and he does it very entertainingly in his lovely little book called Overcoming the Fear of Death. I've met and shared lunch with Kelvin. He's local to me, and in person, he is absolutely intense, but he's so charming. He's on fire with his need to help people finally free themselves from the fear of death, which is the base fear. When you don't fear death, you don't fear anything. You're going to love what he has to say, so please join us next week. This week, our guest has been my wonderful friend, Dr. R. Craig Hogan. Craig is a legend, even though he started, as he says, when he's early 50s. He's a legend among afterlife researchers. Not only is he one of the very few who have studied the evidence enough to be an all-around expert, but also he's at the forefront of the search for as many reliable ways of communicating with the people that have passed on ahead of us as we can possibly find. It astonishes me how this is his particular obsession. He wants everybody to be able to communicate easily with the people who have gone ahead, and he's getting there. He's a leader in planning more positive ways to help people through the passage called death, and he's also a leader in the forefront of what we're beginning to call the new spirituality. I'll talk with you more about that on subsequent programs. The reality is, just as you can use discoveries and objective research to work with any natural phenomenon, we can do that with spirit. And in fact, working with spirit, the genuine God, is going to be the post-religious way of life. You wait and see. The AREI symposium that Craig is going to be leading in September of 2017 will explore that and explore, actually, as he said, a number of different areas where there's a lot of effort and a lot of work going on and a lot of success. It's going to be fantastic. I hope you can join us there. Meanwhile, you know that my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. All of these books now, not the novels yet, but all these books are available from bookstores on Amazon and also now as audiobooks. They're being made available now worldwide in 33 additional languages on Amazon platforms, which is exciting to me. That's just happening now. If you have questions or feedback about any of my books, I'll be delighted to hear from you. As I think you also know by now, recent episodes of Seek Reality are available on bbmglobalnetwork.com. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast on Dream Vision 7 Radio and on the X-Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates worldwide, xzbn.net. They're also on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes for free. Dear friends, I'm so grateful for your friendship, and working together with you to do this work of raising the consciousness of the planet is the most wonderful thing that I can possibly imagine. Thank you for being there. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week and our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.